Hi, we'd like to begin the conference call, please. Thanks for joining us today for the Institute for Literacy and Learning's live chat conference call series. Today, we have the pleasure of being joined by Dr. Ed Shapiro. Dr. Shapiro will be discussing response to intervention, what's working. Dr. Shapiro is the director of the Center for Promoting Research to Practice at Lehigh University. This call is being recorded and will be available in the library section of our website for your future listening pleasure. Before we begin, though, I have some important messages. If you have a question for Dr. Shapiro, please email it to straighttalklivechat@theinstituteforliteracyandlearning.org. Again, the email address is a mouthful, straighttalklivechat@theinstituteforliteracyandlearning.org. There's no spaces in that. Each of you who registered for this conference call will receive an email survey after this call is over. Please help us serve you better by filling out this two-minute survey when it's sent to you. We truly appreciate your input and ideas and use them to better the calls. Please check your inboxes in the next week for the new Straight Talk live chat schedule. We will begin in July with Dr. Randy Sprick, who will be speaking on Introduction to School-Wide and Classroom Discipline, getting the year off to a great start. We hope that you'll join us this summer for Straight Talk live chat because we're not skipping a beat and we hope that you won't either. Also, all of these live chats are recorded and available in the library section of our website. So if you're not sharing this information with your colleagues, your school is missing out on a huge professional development opportunity. Please let everyone know that these valuable chats, free of charge, are available on our website in the library section. The last thing I'd like to share with you before Dr. Shapiro gets started is that the funding source for the Institute for Literacy and Learning has agreed to fund two scholarships for our Straight Talk by the Experts conference from June 16th through 20th in Harrisburg, PA. You can join us for 4.5 days of training with either Dr. Louisa Motz, who is the foremost expert on teacher preparation, as she and her team of national trainers deliver a variety of letters modules, which will bring deeper insight and knowledge to reading instruction, provide answers that instructional materials cannot, and allow teachers to reach students who might otherwise fail through explicit, scientifically based methods. A scholarship is also available to attend a leadership literacy college for building principals and district leaders with Mary Dodoniker. Participants in this 4.5 days of training will learn how to get a solid RTI process going in their schools. Today, Dr. Shapiro is talking about the RTI process, but in the Leadership Literacy College, it's not just a seminar, it's a hands-on workshop in which participants will leave with a comprehensive RTI process to take back and implement it into their schools. So if you're interested in applying for either of these scholarships, please email me at that same email address I had mentioned before, straighttalklivechat@theinstituteforliteracyandlearning.org, for an application. So thank you and for joining us again, and I'd like to now present Dr. Shapiro speaking about response to intervention, what's working. Dr. Shapiro?
Hi, it's great to have everybody online for this. I'm planning to speak for maybe about 20 minutes or so and take folks through the PowerPoint slides, and then would be very willing and able to answer any questions that folks have that can go in a variety of directions. What I'm really going to be emphasizing in the presentation are what are some of the outcomes of the RTI implementation process that we've already been learning about here in Pennsylvania. Over the past 2 years, we've had a series of specific pilot projects that have been run predominantly through the Pennsylvania Department of Education. Those are in 7 different elementary schools across our state. They range from schools that are very urban and very diverse to schools that are very rural and very poor to schools that are very suburban and very non-diverse. We've also gotten a variety of schools that have been operating through the Project MP3, which is Monitoring Progress of Pennsylvania Pupils, a federal model demonstration grant that myself and Naomi Zygmunt at the University of Pittsburgh have, and then we're running that project in 6 different schools in 2 different districts across our state. And then there's all kinds of other district-based kinds of operations that are going on. We've been collecting a lot of data on this, and we really have some information that we want to be able to share, so that's really my main objective in presenting. The first slide that I'm showing you is one that says addressing the priorities, a standards-aligned system. One of the keys to RTI here in our state, and it's probably true in almost every state now in the country, is that whatever one does within RTI, it has to align to whatever the rest of the reform model of that state is about. RTI as a standalone reform model is not something that would be outside of what is already going on within the state. In our state, as you can see, we have a hexagon that represents essentially the different kinds of elements of a standards aligned system, and RTI is a component of many of these, and that RTI certainly is involved with a safety net, fair assessments. It certainly ties to instruction, curriculum, and certainly ties to areas of clear standards. Response to intervention, the next slide, is certainly just a definition of RTI, something that we've all talked about and heard about, and that it really has a dual definition, that in its primary form, and in the form that most of us really talk about RTI, is we talk about it as a comprehensive, multi-tiered intervention process that really is focused on early intervention and early assessment for children who are viewed to be at risk for either academic or behavioral problems. Now, the primary emphasis of RTI has been on academics in the last couple of years, but in truth, RTI in the behavioral side has been around even longer, and that's all the work on school-wide positive behavioral support. So those of you that are in schools that have school-wide positive behavioral support models operating, you really are doing an RTI model in the behavioral side. If anything, the academic side stole away the model that already existed in the behavioral side. The secondary purpose of RTI, obviously, is to be used as an alternate to the aptitude achievement discrepancy model for the identification of students with learning disabilities. And this is not something I'm going to spend any time really today talking about. And this is still in the stages of being developed around the country and is not yet really in full implementation, but certainly will be very shortly in both our state of Pennsylvania as well as other states in the country. The next slide just is a revisiting of the core characteristics of RTI, and I think we know what these are. I'm not going to spend a lot of time talking about them. But certainly, RTI is about a standards-aligned instructional model, that everything within the core instructional program of RTI and in all core instruction is aligned to the standards that represent the standards within each state's methodology for delivering curriculum. That universal screening of both academics and behavior is a clear component of all RTI models, that all models have a component where we look at all children and look at both academic and behavior and screen those who are found to be potentially at risk for more difficulties. Shared ownership of all students is another key core characteristic of RTI, and that through RTI processes and models, we end up in situations where we really talk about our children and not my children or your children. All the decisions are data-based. We use progress monitoring and benchmarking kinds of methodologies for making our decisions about instructional directions, and that the interventions are delivered through tiered interventions. Those tiered interventions, as you'll see in a second, they increase in intensity and in frequency in terms of progress monitoring as you move towards more intensive, more higher level tiered services. And parental engagement should never be forgotten, and that RTI needs to engage parents. It needs to figure out how parents are going to be engaged in the RTI process. But the most crucial work of RTI is really occurring at the general education core curriculum. Unless one has a strong core program operating, whether you're working in reading and math or behavior, unless there's a core program that is strong, that has delivery of good core instruction with good fidelity of instruction, you really don't get a good RTI model operating. So the crucial element of RTI is making sure that the quality teaching and the quality of teaching occurs at the general education core level. The next slide is an illustration of the nature of a schematic of the kind of models that we've been operating predominantly in our state. Every state you will find and every RTI model has differences. That's perfectly acceptable that there are variations on a theme, but this is the kind of model that has really worked in our state and the model that we're using consistently at a statewide level. As with all RTI models, all students are engaged in a core program or a core curriculum, and following the fall benchmark, the fall universal screening benchmark, students are sorted into one of three categories. They're either sorted into benchmark, strategic, or intensive level of need. What has happened in our state is using predominantly a standard protocol model of intervention. And in that model, what schools are doing is they are blocking periods of time out of the day that are called different things in different schools. In some schools, it's called peer time. In some schools, it's called power hour. In some schools, they call it skill groups. And the kids have names for these things as well. What it really means is, during the period of time, which varies from 20 minutes in a very young grade, kindergarten at times, to up to 45 minutes for some of the other grades, during that 20 to 45 minute period of the day, during that period of time, every student in that grade is in one of three kinds of groups. They're either in a benchmark group, a strategic group, or an intensive group. And I'm going to talk a little bit more about what differentiates these groups in a second. What's interesting about this is students who are at benchmark, students who are already achieving at the level that we would expect them to be at, are given an opportunity through this process to receive enrichment or to receive some kind of additional instructional opportunities that maintain those students at benchmark, because the last thing anyone ever wants to do is to see students slip from benchmark over the course of the year. As you can also see in the schematic, that the amount of progress monitoring that's done at strategic every other week is not quite as intense as it is at the intensive level, which is every week. So there's a differentiation of these on the basis of a couple of different things. If you look at the next slide, there's a description of what differentiates Tier 2 and 3. What differentiates Tier 2 and 3 in our model is, while the same amount of time in some models is used, regardless of whether you're Tier 2 or 3, Tier 2 instruction are students who are below benchmark but yet above at-risk levels, whereas Tier 3 are students who are much more at risk. Those two groups get very different kinds of instructional strategies because their needs are different. And those at Tier 3 have much greater needs, and those needs are deeper and usually more complex. Those students get different kinds of interventions than at Tier 2. Size of groups often vary. Tier 2 groups can be anywhere from 8 to 10. Tier 3 groups, 3 to 5. So this is the nature of the model that's been operating in our state. We do have a readiness document that's been created by our state, a tool for self-assessment. Many states are creating these kinds of documents. And this kind of a document is a way for individuals to self-assess what is the readiness of that particular school for moving towards RTI models. Of course, you know this is RTI, so you're going to see some triangles. So the first next slide is the triangle. And this is the slide that represents the triangle here in our state. And again, it just reinforces that Tier 1 is the foundation of it all. It's the standards-aligned instruction for all students. At Tier 2, we have interventions for some students. And at Tier 3, we have intervention for a few students. As you move up the triangle towards Tier 3, there is more time, intensity, and data collection requirements increase. It's also true to note that the red bars go up and down. They're two-way arrows. Kids can move up and kids can move down the triangle. The next slide is something that I always throw in here because I always get the question, well, where does special ed fit in the model that we're operating, and how do you treat special ed in the RTI models that we're dealing with? In some models, in some states, Tier 3 is considered the equivalent of special education. That is not the case in our model. In our model, special ed is viewed as a service delivery model, a service delivery process that can be delivered at whichever tier is appropriate based on the child's skill needs. And what is illustrated in this particular slide is that when you bring an RTI model into a school that already has, of course, children identified as having IEPs, where do those kids actually fall within our tiers? Well, not surprisingly, they're identified as kids with specific learning disabilities. Not surprisingly, the majority of these kids fall into Tier 3. 80 to 90% will be Tier 3, but not all. 10 to 20% will be in Tier 2. And obviously, if any of them are falling at Tier 1, they should probably be go through a declassification process. So this illustrates how special ed is, fits within our model of RTI. So let me get to what the crux of my presentation is really all about. What are some lessons that we've learned? The way in which we've conceptualized this is we've looked at four evaluation questions that tell us something about whether the RTI model is working. How do we know it's working? Well, if the RTI model is working, there are different things we should see. First of all, what we should see is we should see a lessening of the risk level over time and over grades, that the more years we implement RTI, the less risk we should have. And we should see that outcome for both data that are related to things like oral reading fluency, the major measure for reading, as well as non-oral reading fluency data, such as certain kinds of benchmark tests that are used. The second thing that should happen is if an RTI model is working, more children should move from tiers 3 to 2 to 1 than move from 1 to 2 to 3. If you look at the amount of movement that's going on across the year and you're seeing more movement in the direction of more intensity, then your RTI model may not be working very well. What we want to see is movement of kids from the higher, from the more intensive tiers towards benchmark. The third question has to do with movement within tiers, and that is, we know that because we have lots of kids who start out struggling, who are already at risk when we start an RTI model, that the time it's going to take those kids to catch up is going to be far longer than kids who are at less risk. However, what we're asking is the question, are these kids who are at risk, are these kids who are really struggling moving in the right direction to the extent that if they continued on that path, they would be closing the gap and they would close the gap towards the benchmark level of performance sometime within a reasonable framework. I'm talking maybe within 6 months, a year, maybe a year to 2 years of school. If they're moving in the right direction, then that tells us our RTI model is working, and that's what that particular view question would be about. The final question has to do with referrals to the multidisciplinary evaluation process from Tier 3, and here we're dealing with the fact that we know that there are going to be kids who are not going to be responsive to intervention at the rate that we would like them to be, who are going to need a level of service that far exceeds what we can provide in the regular ed setting. Those kids get identified as in need of special ed. And the RTI model should identify those kinds of kids, and the kids identified should indeed have those kinds of intensive needs. So I'm going to walk through briefly some data that we have on each of these questions to illustrate how this process actually has looked in some of our own schools. The bottom line here, I'm giving you the big picture first, is what have we found? The very first thing we find very consistently, every school I have been in, every single place I've gone, the results have been the same. The largest gains occur in the youngest grades. The largest gains occur at kindergarten and first grade. That bodes very well, because if you're only in the first or second year of an RTI process and you're getting great improvement at kindergarten and first grade, as those kids move up the grade scales and the curriculum demands increase, you're going to have fewer kids likely to be at risk because they're going to have a firmer foundation. Across the 7 pilot sites in the state of Pennsylvania, students at low risk on oral reading fluency at the end of first grade average was 72% with a range of 62 to 83. So not every school was at 83%, but not every school was at 62. The mean was 72. And on the at-risk side, the results were 8% with a range of 3 to 11. Now, this was only after the first year of data implementation of RTI. Our data after the second year show even better results than this does. We also found that when you looked at grades 2 through 6, the results are much more variable. There's much more variation in outcomes, with low risk ranging from 42 to 74%. So in some places, we were only able to get 42% of kids at low risk in some of those upper grades. So the outcomes in grade 2 and through 6 are much more variable. Grade 3 through 5, clearly one of the things we discovered very much is you cannot rely in the area of reading alone on oral reading fluency, that you need additional metrics to determine how students are doing. very much. That's because oral reading fluency, while it is a measure that does reflect comprehension and other reading skills, such as vocabulary development, as well as some early literacy skills, it is a measure as you go up in grades that becomes less sensitive to reading outcomes. So you need something else to supplement that measure, beginning at about grade 3. And we found that very consistently in our state. So now I'm going to walk you through some data from a couple of the schools that we've looked at that at least illustrate some of these outcomes. The first set of data are the results of are comparing two different schools in the same school district. Both of these schools have similar demographics. One is a little larger than the other. Southside is a larger school than Tri-C. But you can see the free and reduced lunch levels are not very different, 62 and 44%. The percentage of minority in the school is about the same, and the percentage of students who passed the PSSA, that's the Pennsylvania State Assessment, in reading in 05-06 was about the same, 50%. Tri-C has been implementing an RTI model for the past 3 years in our state. Southside has not really implemented a model of RTI. They've been doing some things, but not really an RTI model that's systematic. So the next data, the next graph, shows the results of kindergarten for phoneme segmentation fluency. And what you can see when you look at this, and this is 04, 05, 05, 06, and 06, 07, remember, these are three different groups of kids. These are not the same children over 3 years. I'll show you another graph like that later on. These are three different groups of kindergarten kids. And what you see is it looks like at Tri-C, you know, they hit a high point in 05, 06 with 87% at low risk and only 2% at risk. And in 06, 07, it dropped a little bit to 78% with 5% at risk. But when you compare that against Southside, you can see Southside's not bad on the low-risk side. On the at-risk side, they're actually twice the level of risk at risk than they are to Tri-C. When you look at first grade nonsense word fluency, the next slide, you begin to start to see the differentiation between these different schools, where Tri-C now has achieved the levels of 72, 77%, 81%, and only 3% at risk. We're at Southside, we're much higher at risk, and we're much lower in the low-risk side. When you get to the first grade oral reading fluency data, now you start to see the pattern that you really expect to see in an RTI model. Notice the step up from 0405 to 0506 to 0607. That's an indication that my model is working, because it's showing that each year I'm resulting in better outcomes of the year before while I'm declining the at-risk level, and while Southside keeps bouncing around and not showing much difference. Second grade really shows the outcomes very dramatically. Again, going from 24% at low risk in the first year to 57%. Given the nature of a school that's an urban school, high risk, lots of kids in poverty, lots of kids who struggle in academics, these are very good outcomes for those kind of schools. And finally, at third grade, we see, again, the same kind of pattern as we did in second grade. Little higher risk level at third grade. Again, this is what we've been finding over and over again, is that when you bring a program in, you're starting at third graders, these kids have not had that exposure to the previous K-1 group. What's interesting is the third group of kids, the 06-07 group, those kids entered the school when they were first graders and got the advantage of an RTI model in first and second grade. Now let's take a look at the same exact students over 3 years. So the first set of graphs showed three different groups of kids, kindergarten, first, and second grade kids, different kids every year. Now we're going to look at the same kids over those 3 years, kindergarten through grade 2. And what you have here in this graph is data that shows the actual attainment of their score. This is using the Dibbles measure of oral reading fluency, which many people are familiar with. The way to look at this graph is the following. The peach bar represents the same group of kids going from kindergarten to first grade to second grade. The lighter colored bar is interesting because that represents kids that started in first grade but weren't there in kindergarten, and kids who started in second grade but weren't there in kindergarten. So these kids have not had 3 years. They had only 2 years. And what's interesting is clearly the kids in the RTI model at Tri-C have done very well, far exceeding the red bar, which is the benchmark level, at all grades. But notice the difference between kids who've been in the Tri-C model for 3 years versus those who've only been in there for two. Even though those kids for two came up to very close or achieved the benchmarks, they're not as good as the kids who've been there for all 3 years. This just reinforces that whole idea of having the foundation. The next slide is on tier movement. As I said, we were looking for movement from 3 to 2 to 1 versus 1 to 2 to 3. Well, if you look at the graphic, it illustrates what went on across four different sites in last year, and that is in across these four sites, we had 23% of the kids moved from tier 2 to 1, 13% moved from 3 to 2. That's a net increase of 36% in that direction. Going in the other direction, we had 5% go from 1 to 2, 15% from 2 to 3 for a net gain, 20% versus 36, a net gain of 16% of kids moved in the direction of less intensity, again, reflecting the achievement of an RTI model. The next one is the question of movement within tiers. So keep in mind that every student who is in a tiered intervention, tier 2 or 3, is starting below the benchmark. If they start below the benchmark, then those kids have longer to gain. They have to gain more than a typical kid at benchmark. If you look at the graph, the graphic illustration, let me walk you through this so you can understand what it's showing you. The blue bars represent essentially the average amount of gain that students had to achieve. This is rate of improvement from fall to spring in the reading skill that's indicated there, either PSF for phoneme segmentation fluency, NWF for nonsense word fluency, or ORF for oral reading fluency. That is the average amount that they would have to gain. So the targeted amount of gain for kids, for example, at grade 3 was 1.84 words correct per minute per week. To give you an idea what that meant was, a typical student who starts at benchmark in the fall and ends at benchmark in the spring moves at the rate of that red bar, 0.94 words correct per minute per week. The kids in tiered intervention at this particular school had to go at a rate twice, double the rate of typical third graders if they were going to close the gap. What did the kids do? Well, look at the maroon bar from this was the maroon bar from September through March. They were moving at a rate of 1.61 words correct per minute per week, achieving almost a targeted amount, but clearly exceeding what the typical amount would be, 0.94. They did slow down a little bit from March to May. That's something we often saw. We saw very often across the schools a slowdown in the rate of performance during the latter part of the year. There's a lot of reasons we think that happens. Part of it is the end of the year phenomenon in schools when the intensity of the instruction just seems to let up a bit once the big test is taken. So what have we learned overall? And I'm going to wrap this up very quickly so I leave plenty of time for discussion. Clearly the focus has to be on instruction. We need to understand that RTI has to have support. And one of the major supports are schedule adjustments. RTI requires a very definitive schedule to make this work. There needs to be time for the intervention, and there needs to be time for staff to learn both how to intervene and how to talk. There needs to be an opportunity for data discussions, for doing instructional decision-making, and teams need to be trained. There needs to be professional development for this, and that development needs to be on-site, and it needs to be embedded very much in the day-to-day instructional process. And the focus has to be on building capacity to make RTI work within the building. The bottom line findings, fall to winter is when you will see your greatest gains. You will see progress slow from winter to spring. We see much less progress from the mid-year to the end of the year than we do from the beginning to the middle of the year. We have decided by March 1st to do something to tweak every intervention just to make sure that it stays fresh for children and fresh for teachers. We also say the progress monitoring must be combined with other data sources from third grade and up to make better decisions. No one data source should be a decision maker. We've been very, very convinced that this is a 3 to 5 year change process, that it takes 3 to 5 years to see the full impact of change. You will see change in the first year, you'll see it again in the second, but it's a 3 to 5 year process. The strongest change occurs in the youngest grades, and that will filter upward and result in less risk as you move up the line. You also see changes in quality of implementation. That is, as teams and as schools get better at implementing RTI year after year after year, the quality of the implementation improves, and therefore the outcomes for kids also improve. It's a three to year change process, but it really can and does work. And I'm going to stop the slide presentation, and we have about, I think, 30 minutes for discussion and interaction.
Great. Thank you, Dr. Shapiro. Very fascinating presentation, as always. We have several questions that have come in. The first one is, because RTI is not a one-size-fits-all model, how do I adjust my RTI for my special education and my English language learners?
That's the question of English language learners and RTI is a very, very good question, and it's a large one. It would probably take a long time to really go through all the issues to really illustrate what you do with English language learners that would be different in an RTI model than you would do with others. In general, the key for English language learners is that they get their necessary instruction in English teaching of English, just like all the other kids are getting through the RTI process, but they must also get what they need related to second language instruction as well. There's a wonderful, wonderful article that I'm going to point you to on a website. The National Center for Learning Disabilities has an RTI Action Network website, and I can send you the link to it.
Great.
On that website, there is a wonderful, excellent article on RTI and second language learners by Sharon Vaughn and Alba Ortiz, who are two national experts in the area, with very specific recommendations about what you should do within RTI models for second language learners, and I would highly recommend you take a look at that website and seek out that information.
Great. We'll make sure that we get that out to everybody, Dr. Shapiro.
The
next question is, what are valid RTI instruments, and what do I look for when determining the appropriate RTI instrument for my school?
I'm not clear what RTI instrument, what they mean by RTI instruments. Perhaps they mean benchmarking instruments, universal screening measures. I'm going to take a guess that that's what's meant by that question.
Okay.
The area that's most well-developed right now is in reading. We know mostly about universal screening and reading. We do have some information in math, but reading is a more well-developed area. The measures that are very well-developed in reading for RTI are measures of they are measures of oral reading fluency, which is a measure that is highly correlated to comprehension, vocabulary, and early language development. We also know that measures of phoneme segmentation and some of the measures that are consistent with early literacy measures are also good universal screening measures. When you get to about third grade and up, those universal screening measures that are used in reading need to shift, as I said. In our state, we've used the Foresight benchmark measures. These are measures that have been developed specifically for our state, and there are other states that are involved with these. But you could also end up using measures that are specific to your curriculum. I have one school that really uses very effectively the end of chapter tests that are consistent with their curriculum. And those measures, they're very convinced those are good measures. They're used by teachers. They get good, reliable data. They use those extensively in the decision-making process for those kids. So, again, it varies very much. In the area of math, there are measures that are typically used for computation, and there's also a set of measures for concepts that are fairly good universal screening measures. Again, in our state, we've been using the Foresight benchmark measures. We find these to be very strong measures. If you're interested in checking them out, you need to check the successforall.org website developed by Bob Slavin and the group at Johns Hopkins. That's where these measures are generated out of.
Okay, great. Thanks. The next question is, how should my RTI and instruction differ in upper grades like 5th through 7th?
Oh, 5th through 7th. Now you're talking middle school. Middle school introduces a very different kind of process and a very different kind of instruction. in truth, right now there are a limited number of evidence-based models at the middle school. I would be hard pressed to tell you that there is strong evidence of how to do this at the middle school. We're still trying to figure that out, and the last thing I will tell you is that we have the answers to that. What people are doing who are doing RTI at those kind of levels are trying to integrate in a more effective way their content-oriented instruction in literature and in writing and written language within the RTI process. So when kids are in that RTI time, they may be getting very specific instruction in strategic strategies in written language, strategies in how to do how to approach literature and to make a content base, because that's what those kids are going to have to face. I wish I had better answers for you at the middle school level. I really don't. But I know folks are working on it. I know people are interested in it. There are a couple of places here in Pennsylvania that are going to be looking at that in some extensive way. And I know the state of Pennsylvania is starting to go and look next year at middle school models for RTI, and maybe we'll be looking at some pilots in that area as well.
Okay, thank you. Can you tell me about the amount of time a student spends in each tier?
Sure. This is an interesting question that that really is variable. I think there's a minimum amount of time that you usually look at it. You need to have enough time for two things to occur. One, you have to have enough time for exposure to the instruction to take hold. You have to have enough time for data collection so that you have enough data to know if the instruction indeed is being effective. Generally, we've been talking to most folks about a minimum at tier two, a minimum of somewhere between 10 to 12 weeks. Tier three, probably 8 to 12 weeks, 8 to 10 weeks. You can go a little less there because you've got more progress monitoring data going on. However, what that simply means is that after 8 or 10 or 12 weeks, one looks at the data, and if the data suggests that the student is on track to potentially may close the gap and be closer to a benchmark student, then one may decide to continue that student in that tier for a longer period of time. In some of our sites, students are at tier two, or not tier three so much, but at tier two for a good part of a school year. Why? Because they're continuing to make good progress. And moving them to tier three makes no sense because they're making good progress on the instructional process they're getting, and they're not ready to move to tier one because they haven't yet closed enough of the gap to be like other kids in benchmark. So those kids have stayed there. Overall, I would say that we've got somewhere around maybe 30 or 40% of kids are going to be moved during the course of the year to a different tier. The majority of those kids move to tier one or move from three to two, but some kids will be moving in the wrong direction. However, if the data says to me, even after 8 or 10 weeks, that I've got a kid who is really struggling at Tier 2 and needs more intensive instruction, I move that kid to Tier 3. If I've got a kid after 8 to 10 weeks at Tier 3 and I'm not getting any progress with very intensive instruction, I got to think seriously about moving that kid towards a special ed decision-making process.
Okay, thank you. Next question is, it appears from your research that RTI is most effective at the earliest grade levels. What happens when students reach middle and high school level? Is there much research indicating the extent of effectiveness of RTI for older students? Does intervention look different?
The answer to all of that is yes and no. The answer is there is not a lot of research yet done on middle and high school students in RTI. There is some that's been out there, but it is very, very skimpy right now. It's a new area that people are looking at. Does RTI look different in middle and high school? It absolutely has to. One of the reasons it looks different is because of the issues of block scheduling at middle and high school. You also have the issue of the kind of instruction that we're talking about. When you're talking about kids that are struggling in some of the basic skills, those kids may be struggling in different kinds of issues, such as adolescent literacy development, difficulties in strategy thinking, the ability to do higher order thinking. Those kinds of things are the kind of things that you're going to have to consider when you look at RTI at middle and high school. And we really don't have yet enough information or data to definitively know how it's going to look or how it should look at that level. I would be making a big mistake if I told you we knew a lot about that. We don't. It does work very well at the younger grades. We have lots of data on the younger grades. There's no doubt that it works on the younger grades. And conceptually, if you do it well at the younger grades, you should have fewer kids to worry about at middle and high school.
Right.
But do we have the empirical support right now for middle and high school? Don't let anyone tell you they have it. It's not there yet. Some people are working on it, but it's not there yet.
Okay, thank you. Next question, how much additional instructional time is needed for Tier 3 students, and what supplemental materials may be used to get these students up to benchmark?
Okay. The amount of time for kids at Tier 3, we really talk about if you're using 30 minutes 5 days a week for Tier 2, then you need 30 minutes five times a week plus an additional 60 minutes at least for Tier 3. The amount of time will vary by the model. Some of the models I'm working in, they've done it where we've got kids in 3 days a week at Tier 2 and 5 days a week at Tier 3. We've got some models where 5 days a week at Tier 2 and then 5 days a week at Tier 3 plus stealing an additional 2 hours across the week at Tier 3. So the amount of time at Tier 3 is going to be substantial. More importantly is the size of the group has to be small. You really need anywhere from 3 to 5, no more than 5 kids in that small group. That becomes important. And the nature of the instructional process there is going to be the kind of instruction that would be more intensively oriented for kids at greater skill deficits. For example, if you're working in reading, you may be doing things like corrective reading, which is a comprehensive program that's a more directed instruction kind of approach at Tier 3. You might be doing Wilson reading at Tier 3, whereas at Tier 2, you might be doing something like a sort of success kind of model, which is not quite as intensive as what you have at Tier 3 with these kinds of kids who are likely to have much more struggles of those kinds of difficulties that are difficult, you know, those kind of really difficult skill problems at Tier 3. So the level of the intensity of the instruction is different. The nature of the instruction at Tier 3 is different. And the amount of time is always more.
Okay, thanks. And the last question that we have is, I am very interested in knowing if the schools you looked at were reading first schools and were any of the schools in Pennsylvania.
Many of the schools in Pennsylvania were reading first schools. The 7 schools in our pilot project were not reading first schools. None of the 7 schools we worked in our pilot project are reading first schools, but many, many of the schools that are doing RTI have been reading first schools. I think if they had reading first in their building, they probably have an easier transition to RTI because some of those foundations should already be built in through the reading first program.
Okay, great. And I want to mention quickly that Dr. Shapiro mentioned the research document by Dr. Sharon Vaughn, and want to let everyone know that Dr. Vaughn will be presenting a Straight Talk Live chat with us on August 19th at 2 p.m. titled Teaching Older Students with Reading Difficulties.
Good.
So you will find her on the schedule that will be mailed to you this week of our upcoming Straight Talk Live chat schedule. So thank you, Dr. Shapiro, and thanks everyone for joining us today. I want to remind everyone again that all of these live chats are recorded and available in the library section of our website. We encourage you to use them as a professional development tool in your school. I'd also like to remind you that the Institute for Literacy and Learning has agreed to fund 2 scholarships for our Straight Talk by the Experts conference in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania from June 16th through June 20th. You can join us for 4.5 days of training with Dr. Louisa Motz, the foremost expert on teacher preparation, as she and her team of national trainers deliver a variety of letters modules which will increase your understanding of how students learn to read, write, and spell, why some of them struggle, and how to implement proven instructional strategies to promote reading success. And a scholarship is also available to attend a leadership literacy college for building principals and their district leaders with Mary Doe Doniker. And in this 4.5-day hands-on workshop, you'll leave with a comprehensive RTI process to take back and implement into your schools. So please email me at straighttalklivechat@theinstituteforliteracyandlearning.org for a scholarship application to either of these Straight Talk by the Experts conferences. Thank you again, Dr. Shapiro, for spending your time with us today at the Institute for Literacy and Learning. As I'm going to unmute the telephones, and when I do, could you all help me in giving Dr. Shapiro a round of applause? Just 1 second, please. Okay,
the
there
conference
we go. Thank
is
you,
no
Dr.
longer
Shapiro,
in lecture mode.
Thank you. Have a great week, everyone.